Welcome to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Marcellus Wiley here, looking plain, but not him.
It's Friday. It's a Friday fit. Bro, the thing is, I'm wearing shorts. I don't even know if y'all can see it. Yeah, y'all can see it. I got the shorts on.
Is Deadspin still a thing? Because that needs to be on there right now. That's my man, Emmanuel Acho, looking crispy as usual. Let's get it started with the Lakers. Bounce back in the bubble with what Anthony Davis called a must-win game. LeBron James only scored 10 points, his lowest total ever in a playoff win. But there was a lot of AD who dropped 31 points on the Blazers to tie up this series. After the game, LeBron reflected on LA's tough path this season. Listen.
I really don't compare us to anybody in the league. It's not what everybody else does. It's not what the time everyone's put in. I just know what type of season we've had this year. It's been three or four seasons in one. I know what we're capable of. I know how we're built. And I don't compare us to anyone. I compare us to us. And, I direct that to every one of our players because it's not about what everybody else is doing. It's about our mindset.
Acho, the Lakers proved they're the best in the West.
West side? They did, bro. The Lakers proved it because I told you, I submitted a Wileyism yesterday.
You did.
Yesterday, I submitted a Wileyism. And I said, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
I love that one, though.
Right?
I love you.
Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. But Marcellus, when talent does work hard, it can't be beat. And the Lakers yesterday, they showed us when talent finally does work hard, they cannot be stopped. I've submitted the fact that the Blazers, they do have the better 3-7 on the depth chart. Yeah. When you look at Dame, when you look at CJ, when you look at Melo, when you look at Gary Trent, when you look at Nurk, the Blazers have the better 3-7. But the Lakers 1+2 outweighed the Blazers 3-7 because they just dominated at will.
Now,
I'm not so ignorant as to say that
there we go.
The Lakers didn't play better than they'll probably play yesterday.
Oh.
And the Blazers didn't play worse than they'll probably play yesterday.
Law
the game
averages.
Wasn't a 30 point. Those aren't two teams that are 30 points separated by each other talent-wise.
No,
it's probably somewhere in the middle. But what we do know is that AD, when he wants to ball, he can't be stopped. Seven-footer, they can shoot the three, they can bring the ball up the court.
Oh.
He can't be stopped. So when you have two guys who seemingly can't be stopped, they are the best in the West. Because, bruh, Bron only had 10 points, and them cats still won by 30. By 30.
Okay.
So what I look at it is the Lakers are the best team when they want to be. Marcellus, it's like this. You know when you when you racing somebody. I'll say it like this. My rookie season, my second year in the league, I'm one-on-one against LeSean McCoy. His Instagram handle.
That's why you're here right now.
That is exactly why I'm here. That's exactly why I'm sitting in this chair.
Yeah.
LeSean McCoy, I can't guard.
Nah.
The dude can cut on a dime like his Twitter handle says. But when he would show up to practice and he didn't really feel like going, you best believe I had his number.
Oh, you did that.
But the second he was like, wait a second, I'm actually significantly better than this guy, it was a wrap. And that's the LA Lakers. When they show up sleepwalking, you best believe somebody can catch him slipping. But the day AD shows up to the court and realizes, wait a second, I'm one of the top five basketball players in the world, I can't be beat. That's what the Lakers did yesterday.
Wow. Strong argument, but it came up short.
Winning argument.
Like that outfit, a little short. Here we go. No, they're not the best team in the West. It's amazing that your argument sounds like someone who's giving it to them because of default. Oh, they're the number one seed, and they actually won a game, which they're supposed to win. They're playing not only an 8 seed, a play-in 8 seed with a star who was like, I ain't even going to the bubble unless I got a chance. And then that game of chance, they had to win damn near every game to get into the position of being an 8 seed. I mean, grabbing, reaching for the rope, please, number 8 seed, let us hold on. And they do. And now the Lakers are the best team in the West, and they don't even have a lead in this series. They are tied. They climbed out of a hole with a play-in team to get to even. And you're going to sit here and say, now this is the best team in the West. But that's what millennials do.
Oh, is that?
Yeah, yeah. The famous philosopher Uncle Jimmy once told me.
I'm about to discredit anything that comes out your mouth.
You know, old school like us, we don't expect too much. It's just y'all accept too little. Deep right there.
That's a bar.
Because if you look at the Lakers all season long, you would have expected them to be up 2-0 or at least have two dominant performances even in a loss. We didn't see that from the Lakers. What we're seeing from the Lakers is a team, like you said, Jekyll and Hyde. Anthony Davis could go out there and say, yeah, I look better in game 2 because I play with more energy, more heart. He also played the center position, which helped him out tremendously. But Anthony Davis wasn't the biggest issue in game one. The biggest issue in game one is they didn't get the surrounding support that they got in game two, to the point where their leader said, oh, I could take this one off. Y'all boys gonna handle that. But as you know, every single coach, when you come back into that locker room and he draws it up on a whiteboard, he's like, hey, y'all, we won a game. But that wasn't the winning formula. The winning formula is something else, something we could repeat, something we could duplicate. Right now, I'm not seeing that with the Lakers.
You're a smart man, so I'm going to ask you to use your intelligence and answer this hypothetical question.
Okay.
If you were to remove the seating, you're intelligent enough to do this. If you were to remove the seating, where would you put the Blazers? Because you know, as far as the eight teams that are left in the West, not an eight seed.
All right.
So if you take your time.
Can I do it? You want me to do it right now? Ahead. You know what? I would have to change the seeding for both. Because if you're going by the heat of the bubble team of the Blazers, they might be the number one or number two. But what the Lakers will be?
I don't care. Because that's irrelevant.
I do. They will be like 7 to 8.
Perfectly
the
fine.
Play.
Perfectly
okay,
fine.
Now.
What that means is if you were to make the Blazers, I don't know what you just said, a 1, a 2, a 3, a 4, whatever.
The way they were playing.
The Lakers just beat that hypothetical 1 or 2 seed by 30 points in a game that the best player in the world only had 10, sir. Mm-hmm. So you actually just defeated yourself.
No.
If you just make the Blazers where they truly are, not an 8 seed, because out your mouth, you just said a 1 or 2, but I'll say a 1, 2, or a 3. The Lakers just dubbed that 1, 2, or 3 seed by how they are playing by 30 points. So if the question is, did the Lakers just prove that they're the best team in the West, and Marcellus Wiley just told y'all, ladies and gentlemen, that the Blazers are one of the top 2-3 teams in the West, the Lakers just beat that team by 30 points.
I just learned who I'm really going to be working with for a long time.
An intelligent human being.
Well, yeah.
Who wins arguments.
And an ambassador of fantasy land. You love, you hate reality. You look in the mirror and you be like, damn you, what are you doing here? I want something else that's not right in front of me. I am dealing the reality. The reality is they are an 8 seed. You just talked about the law of averages. These are not two teams that are separated by 30 points. So they're going to regress to the mean. And when they regress to the mean, the same guy who kept saying, poor Porzingis got kicked out. If he didn't get kicked out, you know what the Clippers will be down.
I wasn't crying.
Well, Damian Lillard was out of the game from the third quarter as well. But
they
somehow,
were
some way,
they were still down by 20.
Down by 30. I don't hear the same cries from my co-host. Oh, we got to bring in our guy, Slick Rick, the Booker NBA analyst right here. Slick Rick, Lakers proved they're the best in the West Side.
If I'm mistaken, they didn't play the Clippers, did they?
Were they playing the Blazers?
The Blazers. We had this same conversation. First of all, you're hypothetical. You guys, the analogies and the Wileyisms are really good. Your hypotheticals, not so much. Because if we're seeding based on the bubble, the Phoenix Suns are the number one seed, and they're not even playing. So, let's put that aside.
Thank you.
Okay, get to the point. Get to the point, Slick.
Thank you.
Coming into the bubble, our question was, still, are the Lakers better than the Clippers? We haven't seen the Clippers at full strength. We still haven't seen them at full strength. Mm. They were 2-2 during the regular season. So until I see them go head-to-head, I can't make any determination on whether the Lakers actually are the best team in the Western Conference. Were they the best team in the Western Conference during the regular season?
Preach.
Yes, they were. But as Marcellus has pointed out many a time, and as we understand this is part of the Kawhi Leonard formula, we haven't seen the best of the Clippers.
Slick,
now, maybe we won't.
No.
Maybe they can't get there.
I want you to finish. You're killing them too hard.
Raise some doubt.
Slick.
Throw it to town. Go finish,
there's
Slick.
There's nothing that the Lakers did. The Lakers were embarrassed in game one.
Yes.
They came back and they outworked the 8th seed Trailblazers. Ooh. If they do that every game, yes, they will win this series. Does that mean they're the best team in the Western Conference? I can't. That leap. Especially at this point with my vertical, I can't make that.
Tell him, Slick.
I'm glad you lightened up my mood because you really ran me hot just there. If you were to grab a Merriam-Webster's dictionary and look up the word hypothetical or fantasy land, you would see a picture of Marcellus and any other Clippers fan right next to it.
Ooh.
Because, Slick, what you just said, what Marcellus has been saying is a hypothetical fantasy land. All season long, we have heard the Clippers haven't reached their full strength. all season long we have heard the Clippers are just a playoff team. Wait till they turn it up. Now all bubble long we have heard the Clippers haven't yet meshed. Hypothetically speaking, there's going to come a point when the Clippers really play like they're supposed to play. Slick. Y'all literally, you and Marcellus, y'all live in a hypothetical. So how dare y'all call me out when I paint a small fragment of the reality that you all exist in?
Slick.
Yeah. Because I have seen the Clippers play the Lakers in the first game of the season.
Ooh.
I saw them play them in the second game of the season.
Like 300 days ago?
The Lakers. Even not at full strength, they dominated them. I saw them in the first quarter against the Dallas Mavericks go, oh, damn, we want to. When we go hard, when we go complete, this team can't compete with us. Now, do they have a tendency to downshift as soon as they feel like they've made their point? Yes, and that is troubling. But in terms of what they're capable of, I have no doubt that the Clippers are capable of beating the Lakers.
Because his, Marcellus, this is what you and Slick
are
doing.
Don't say my name. I ain't on your side.
This is what y'all are doing. Y'all are looking at the individual parts that the Clippers have. Well, they have maybe the best sixth man of all time in Lou Will. They have Paul George back in 2014. This dude was going head-to-head with LeBron. Mm. They have Kawhi. If he wins another MVP, maybe he's one of the greatest. And y'all are taking all of the parts and assuming that they will make a great whole. Although we haven't seen the greatest whole yet, y'all are assuming that that's what's going
to
happen.
All I want to say is you continue to use the past, which is the regular season, before the bubble, in favor of your argument, but you dismiss it all the times when we talk about the Lakers and their struggles. Who have the Lakers been post-bubble? More importantly, who have the Lakers been after they had success in the bubbles? Full screen king time, damn it. I didn't want to have to do this to you, but the Lakers must be partying and popping bottles in the streets of the bubble in Orlando because they will not respond well after a win. 0-3, and y'all want to see the points per game average combined between LeBron James and Anthony Davis? Fewer than what Anthony Davis had last night, even in game one. So the point of this is there are two different seasons occurring. Two different teams when we're looking at the Lakers. Pre-bubble Lakers, hey, best in the West, I gave you that. Number one seed coming in the bubble. But somehow, some way, in a soliloquy of LeBron James always talking about, oh, it's been like 3 or 4 seasons for us so far this year in all the circumstances, and they don't wrap my sushi the same way they do on the West Hollywood. All of that has changed his mind and the way his team approaches the bubble. This is not the same team. That's why they're not the best.
No, the first problem, Marcellus, I have is with Slick. And Slick's argument is dating back to when you had hair. Back when the Clippers beat the Lakers back in 2000. And who cares, Slick? Don't tell me about all that. Now, Marcellus, the problem I have with this year.
That's what I told you. No. He uses it for him or never for him.
This year, no, Slick, you took me back to 2019 before the national pandemic, before the season was shut down, and then there was a 4-month layoff before the restart. That does not have an implication on what we're seeing right now, but I got to deal with Marcellus. Because Marcellus just showed us a full screen after the Lakers locked up the one seed, which you, Marcellus, preach that meaningless games are meaningless, and you just showed me a meaningless graphic because you have a flag planted like the one that is on the moon. You have a flag planted saying that meaningless games are meaningless. The Lakers had locked up the one seed during this graphic and these meaningless statistics that you're using to lie to the audience.
Okay, look, I understand that you're making a lazy argument, so now you're trying to revive it. It's okay, big dog. I love you. I love working with you. You have tremendous energy. Suspect intelligence at times. Here we go. Look, my teachers used to always tell me, it's not just getting an A in this class that's difficult. It's keeping an A in this class. And the Lakers finally got an A in the bubble. But now the conversation is, can they keep an A in the bubble? Because we have not seen that just yet. But my mama raised me better than this. I've been yelling a lot. I've been acting like I don't have respect for the Lakers.
Calm down, Marcellus.
I got to give y'all flowers. Slick Rick, let's all have a ceremony for the Lakers because it's been 3,016 days since the Lakers won a playoff game, y'all. That is 8 years, 3 months, and 2 days ago.
How long have the Clippers went to the Western Conference
Finals? We don't talk about that on this show in the A block. We don't do that. But AD was in college, and LeBron hadn't even won an NBA title. before the Lakers had won their last playoff game. So much respect to him, Slick Rick. You want to say anything at this ceremony?
Amen. Pour one out for that streak for the Lakers. And by the way, Acho, if you're not going to count the Clippers wins pre-bubble, then we can't count the Lakers having the best record in the Western Conference pre-bubble. We can only go based on what we've seen in the bubble. Right?
That's fair.
Oh,
fair.
That's what I've been saying.
Fair.
Fair.
No. What I'm saying.
How is one win against the Blazers, the same team that they lost to in game one, proof that they are the best team in the Western
Conference? It's simple, Slick. Using your logic, everyone, we will use Slick's logic.
What?
We are only going to address what we have seen most recently in the bubble. And Slick, right before you came on, Marcellus said...
Oh, man, you a snitch!
Marcellus said the Blazers were one of the top three teams in the West. If you beat one of the top three teams, and we already assume you are a top team, that therefore makes you the top team. Marcellus's favorite sport is track and field. If I beat the fastest person in the world, that now makes me the fastest person in the world. Marcellus's other favorite sports are boxing. If you beat an undisputed heavyweight champion, you are now the heavyweight champion. We already know the Lakers are top tier. They showed us again that they have beat one of the hottest or top tier, making them the top tier. I rest my case.
Marcellus is right a lot, but he's not always right.
So y'all beefing now. Hey, Slick, all I know is if you beat the fastest guy in the world, you're not the fastest. You got to beat his world record to be the fastest. That's a damn lie. And I also said before you got on, Slick, I like Acho. I changed my mind on that one, too. Coming up, we'll talk about my Clippers, where Paul George is being more rated R than PG-13 with his critics.
Good tease.
Plus, at the top of the hour, LeBron needs AD to step up now in the playoffs. We'll tell you if we think he can, count on the brow. Next, speak for yourself.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Let's move to LA's other team. That's Marcellus's Clippers. They're tied 1-1 with the Mavericks after losing Wednesday. Paul George went 4-for-17, ew, from the field in the loss. Then PG went to IG with a post to his critics, who called him out on his performance, saying, quote, "I don't give a bleep what anybody think about me. Bleep as you think about me for anyway." We joined once again by my dog, Slick Rick. But Marcellus, I'm coming to you first. Was it smart for Paul George to clap back at his critics?
No, not smart at all. It hurt me to my core. I was like, what are you doing?
Why it hurt you, bro? Why it hurt
What are you doing? But I didn't want to be another critic. I didn't want to have to really feel the heat of what PG was feeling. And it's interesting. Look, this could get really deep, but let me start on the surface with this one. PG, you shouldn't be hurt in the first place. You're Paul George. I know you. I know your family. I know you very well. Walking around being Paul George is a blessed experience. You got to remind yourself of those situations, especially when you hit low points in life. But even if they get a good shot in, and I know I scroll through sometimes and they snag me too. You be like, oh, I thought I had my guard up and they got me right there. That's when you got to tap into your ego, remind yourself of who you are, and make sure you don't let them know that they got that shot in. Sometimes you got to fake it till you make it, brother. Mm-hmm. But in this situation, I understand why they got Paul George. If you know him, he has a heart. He is a real person. He is a high character guy. Aww. And I'm going to be real. If you have a heart and you get on social media, remind yourself that social media is heartless.
Talk about it, bro.
They don't give a...
Talk about it.
Them eggs are ready. Nothing to lose in their mind. Maybe they do in their real life. But on social media, as soon as you log on, you have to be ready to engage in a senseless experience. And Paul George, when you hit a low point or just, hey, you just had an off game, the last thing you want to do is go to the abyss where the eggs live, man. I feel bad for you, big dog, but you can't let them see you sweat.
There's no problem with him clapping back. We've seen Damian Lillard and any number of players do it. It's how Paul clapped back.
Okay, he don't like it.
Okay, daddy and him coming out. Come on, Pops.
First of all, don't start with a bald-faced lie. I don't give a bleep what anybody thinks.
I mean,
well, then why are you responding if you don't care?
Talk about it.
When somebody says something that means nothing to me, I just keep it moving. So, we've got that. The second part, I don't understand why anybody is thinking about me anyway. not the way to go here. You are not only an NBA player in your 10th season, but you are a spokesman for Gatorade and Nike and Tissot and Pro Bass Shops. All of those people pay you money because fans think about you. And whether they think about you positively or negatively, the reality is they think about you. You are visible. And oh, by the way, in 2019, the fans voted you a starter in the 2019 All-Star Game for the Western Conference. You weren't having any problem with them thinking about you then.
Oh, man.
Look, it comes both ways. You have to accept the fact that you're in the public eye. Sometimes they're going to love you. Sometimes they're going to hate you. But after 10 seasons, Paul, you should know better than this.
Yeah, I gotta piggyback on what both these gentlemen said. Now, I'm going to keep it real. I'm going to keep it a buck. Every day after the show, Marcellus and Slick, I get on Twitter because I got to see what the people are talking about. We do this show for the people. We do it for y'all. So I hop on Twitter, and some comments, they hit your heart more than others because some comments got some truth to him. Yesterday, I grabbed my phone. I was scrolling on Twitter.
What you
somebody had the audacity to say, Acho, you need a stylist. You don't know how to dress. I paid no attention to that, Marcellus.
Oh, really?
You know your boy is fresh. Now, if you get on Twitter and somebody's like, Acho, why are you always yelling? I'm like, oh, you know what? I do be yelling a lot. There might be some truth to that. See, that one hits me harder to the core because there might be some truth to it. PG, Marcellus, the reason he's so sensitive is because Playoff P, this new and unimproved Playoff P, he ain't got out the first round in the last 4 years. See, the reason Paul George is a little more sensitive is because he realized there's some truth to what people are saying. 2018-19, first round exit with the Thunder.
Don't do
2018,
this.
First round exit with the Thunder. 2017, first round exit with the Pacers. 2016, first round exit with the Pacers. Paul George realizes, wait a second, maybe my reputation is starting to precede me. The reason it's dumb to respond to the critics is because he's letting his critics know they might be right.
Man, look, man, damn you. What happens when they say, sometimes they be, I get it too. They were like, where's your forehead at, Acho?
I get that. They used to call me three head. They used to call me head and shoulders.
Okay.
I got all them.
Did that hurt? Did that hurt?
No.
Okay.
I'm fresh.
Oh, yeah. You fresh, but you ain't got no forehead either. Let me say this. let me go here. A hit dog is going to holler. We know when they get you, it's because some truth in that thing. Shaggy, you hit me with the truth. Don't do that. But game one, Playoff P showed up. Playoff P hit the shot that really won the game for the Clippers, if you want to go there in terms of game one. So it's weird how we are using selective perception to let some things get into us and hurt us and then not let everything that build us up continue to elevate us. As Slick Rick pointed out, all of the endorsements and his Nike shoes and Gatorade, all this stuff, just being around Paul George, you're sitting there like, damn, dog, do you ever have a cloudy day because of who you are and how you've contributed to the game? But let me hit you with two elements right here. The first one comes from T.I. I was listening to this song the other day, Live Your Life. Mm-hmm. Hey, you're faithful, whatever they say. But then his first line is really poignant. It really hits home. Never mind what haters say, ignore them till they fade away.
That's a bar.
Bar. Hey, man, I'm telling y'all, I ignore y'all. Don't think that I ain't got some smoke to come back at you with. It's just, I just ignore you till you fade away. I need Paul George to understand that, especially with the volume of criticism that he deals with, because all of us combined is not dealing with half of what Paul George is dealing with in terms of that volume of criticism. We get it. He's an active NBA star.
People be hating on me, Marcellus.
Well, I do too, but you know, it still ain't up to that level yet. The webisodes are popping. I give you that, but you ain't there yet, damn it. But here's something I want to just get in real quick. Because it's amazing when you are on the grind to become a Paul George, become a Slick Rick the Buker, Emmanuel Acho. When you are on that climb, no one is sitting there in solidarity saying you're going to make it. There's always a critic or two. There's always a population of naysayers. But you know how you shut them up? You made it. And then those same people, because it happened to me, show up to your damn draft party. Eating your food, drinking your drink, talking about how they coming to your game on tickets, you got to get them. And then you know what you have to do in that moment? Because now it's a social media and everybody think they know Paul George until he doesn't play well. Then they turn on Paul George. You got to make it again. Get out that first round, big dog. Make those shots. Ignore those haters till they fade away, big dog.
Yeah, Otto, I'm going to hone in on one word that you said about the people on social media and the reaction that you get, that we all get, and that's the critics. Like, who are they? What are their credentials? Woo. What do they know about what you do or what the job requires? What do they know about Paul George or what the job requires? If I look at it in that context, if I get criticism or I get feedback from somebody in the business that knows me and knows the job, I'm going to pay attention to that. That's constructive. Somebody who doesn't know anything about me or what it requires to do the job or what the circumstances were under that in that particular situation, then it really doesn't have a whole lot of meaning. And right. I don't always apply this, but when I do, it never fails me. And it's my three rules for engaging on social media. When any time that I want to fire back, I'm ready to go to war, I can't look, I got to put this person in their place. Mm. Does it need to be said? Does it need to be said by me? And does it need to be said by me right now? And if I can't definitively say yes, 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 then I probably need to chill for a hot minute. And I guarantee you, Paul George, if he's thinking about this today, he's probably hitting that delete button going, yeah, I don't need to engage. I don't need to put that out there. But anytime we're emotional and we get into it, we're probably, social media is like a loaded gun, man. You shouldn't deal with it. You shouldn't pick it up when you are under the influence of emotion, fatigue, or anything else.
Boy, I would love to see Slick Rick's draft inbox because I know it's full of tweets you wanted to see. And you ain't sent them yet, Big Dog. I know it's
Look,
real.
I'm going to say this, though, to PG. Success is the best way to silence the haters. And ultimately, PG got to go out there and be successful. He's 7-17 in his last 24 playoff games. In them last 24 playoff games, only posted a positive plus minus 9 times. So, PG, if you really want to shut him up, you got to go ball. Marcellus, to that point, I actually wrote a philosophy paper on T.I. Different song, though. Coming up,
damn.
If Russell Wilson wants to be mentioned in the same breath as Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, there's something he got to do. Actually, a couple things. I'm going to explain that
Welcome
next.
Back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. You might find this hard to believe, but in Russell Wilson's 8 years in the league, 19 players have received MVP votes, while Wilson has donuts, zero. Let that sink in. But the former Super Bowl champ says he prefers parades over individual awards. Take a listen.
The number one important thing is the winning part. The MVPs and stuff like that, and hopefully the votes, and maybe I'll get one day. But you know, the reality is that you know I wake up to win it all. And I wake up to be the best, too. I'm not going to shy away from that. Hopefully if I do win an MVP, it's because we're doing it great as a team. The guys are making plays, and we're all doing it together. Hopefully, we'll do that this year.
Joined now by Fox NFL analyst LeVar Arrington. But Acho, need to know, does Russell Wilson need an MVP to be an all-time great QB?
Absolutely. Now, first thing, let me get this out the way, the pleasantries. Russell Wilson, one of the greatest quarterbacks we've seen in this generation, because you know, Marcellus, the hate is coming if you ever dare speak a truth, which does not utterly uplift Russell Wilson.
Yeah, that's real.
But does he need an MVP, at least that. Let me make a distinction clear. There is a difference between a Hall of Famer and an all-time great. Russell Wilson, very likely going to be an Hall of Famer. But to be an all-time great, gentlemen, I'm thinking top five. I'm thinking top 10. And the problem is, to be an all-time great, you have to be great all time. It's simple. Russell Wilson, when I think about the quarterbacks
Deep.
Of this generation,
right.
Tom Brady, all-time great.
I mean, he wrote that day.
No, like, you really, it's so complicated, but it's so simple.
Really
you got to be great
That's
all
his
time.
Thesis statement.
Think about the quarterbacks this generation. Where does Russ fall in? Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers. Then I would probably Ben Roethlisberger, and then I would probably go Russell Wilson. So Russell Wilson is as a generational right now. He's falling in the mix at five or six of the generation because he doesn't have an MVP, because he doesn't have a Super Bowl MVP. You got guys like Patrick Mahomes, mind you, NFL MVPs, Super Bowl MVPs, already in his third year of going on of NFL football. So does Russell Wilson need at least an MVP to be an all-time great? Absolutely. No knock on Russ. Still a Hall of Famer. Still elite. But to be an all-time great, you have to be great amongst the all-time ranks. And Russ has to get at least several MVPs, several Super Bowls. It can't, his biggest accomplishment, gentlemen, cannot be going to the Super Bowl his rookie year. There has to be another stamp to make Russ an all-time great.
Look, I don't think he needs it. First of all, look at how high a esteem we have for Russell Wilson without it already. And if he goes out there, imagine if, I love you in fantasy land, Acho. Imagine if he had completed that goal line pass. That's two rings. But even without that, still what's in front of Russell Wilson in terms of attempts, opportunities, accomplishments, yes, he can be an elite all-time quarterback. I think he's already going to be considered an all-time quarterback.
All-time it's, great?
Yes. Nice cherry on top. I give you that. But not an essential ingredient when you talk about who Russell Wilson is. Big Ben Roethlisberger is going to be considered a Hall of Famer. Some will debate if he's going to be an all-time great or Absolutely. Just a Hall of Famer.
Absolutely.
But he's going to be in that conversation, and he's never won an MVP. Eli also. Now, Eli's going to be at the bottom of that. He's going to get in the Hall of Fame, but we're not going to consider him probably all-time great. But still another all-time great quarterback, who Hall of Famer, who will not get an MVP
vote. Two Super Bowl MVPs.
Respectful whatever way you get up the mountain, but you got up there, brother. How about Dan Fouts, Bob Greasy, Jim Kelly, Joe Namath, Roger Staubach? A lot of tremendous quarterbacks who never, ever received this award. And let's talk about this award. And this is why I think Russell Wilson needs to respect his road, even if it doesn't consider him an MVP. A, I tell the world, if you don't see my stripes, you can't see because they're there. And Russell Wilson, look at these voters. Oh, y'all don't see my stripes? Well, they're there because let's look at Russell Wilson. 2013, 2014, led the Seahawks to the top seed in the NFC, no votes. Also, 2015, finished the year the highest quarterback rating in the NFL, no votes. 2017, led the NFL in touchdown passes and second in rush yards. Didn't Lamar Jackson basically do that but was first in rush yards? And Lamar Jackson wins the MVP. Russell Wilson, no MVP votes at all. So maybe it's the vision of the voters that needs to be under the microscope and needs to be considered more so than Russell Wilson and his greatness.
Yeah, I think you guys both hit on some great points. I think there's certainly levels to it. I don't think he needs an MVP to be considered an all-time great. But with that being said, I come back to what you were trying to touch on right there, Marcellus, in terms of the voting and how MVPs are looked at. It's more, in a lot of ways, it's a popularity contest. It's like, did you get hot at the right time? I'm you know, we use J.J. Watt as an example all the time. When I look at the greatest defensive lineman of all time, I think about Bruce Smith. I think about Reggie White. I think about Deacon Jones. I think about some really, really phenomenal football players. And then I start thinking about J.J. Watt and a few different guys that may or may not fall into the conversation. And that's with MVP honors. So to me, I think that it kind of comes down to like what you said, Marcellus, is what those voters are feeling in the moment. You know, T.O. was a first ballot Hall of Famer. There's no way you can argue that. There shouldn't have been a debate about it, and he should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. But for some strange reason, the voters didn't feel as though it was right to put him in as a first ballot Hall of Famer. Harry Carson, the same situation. And Harry Carson got to the point where he didn't even want to go into the Pro Hall of Fame, and he was one of the greats that had ever played the linebacker's position. So when it comes down to things that are based upon a vote, and it's not a vote from the players or the coaches themselves, I tend to go towards, yes, he can still fall in the conversation of greatness, but that is a logjam of a distinction to have at the quarterback position. And I think that that's the biggest counter argument to all of this, is that Russ has played great, but the greatest of all time had played at a level that's different than Russell Wilson's at this moment.
Now, let me clarify. Russ won that Super Bowl his sophomore season, not his rookie season. But, LeVar, to your point, this is like a barbershop conversation, so let's just keep it real. It's levels to greatness in the NFL. First and foremost, just making it to the NFL. More likely to get struck by lightning than you are to make it into the NFL. That's an accomplishment. Now, the average NFL career is 3.3 years. So to play over that, that's another little accomplishment. Then you can be a good NFL player, play 5 or 6 seasons, not make any Pro Bowls, no All Pros. Then you can be a great NFL player, right? Make an All Pro, make a couple All Pros, make a couple Pro Bowls. Then you can be a Hall of Fame type of NFL player. 7, 8, 9 Pro Bowls, 6 All Pros, three first-team All-Pros, but then you can be a all-time great. Several MVPs, multiple Super Bowls, maybe even a Super Bowl MVP or so. Again, Russ is in that tier. He's climbing up that tier of greatness. He is right now in that great category. He's flirting with that Hall of Fame category. I still think there probably needs to be a little bit more length to his career to get that. But when you talk about all-time greats, Marcellus, you can't hand out no participation trophies and just throw everybody in the all-time great conversation because there are only about 5 or 10 all-time greats. But Marcellus, what is your category? What are your qualifications for all-time greatness?
Balled the hell out. And that's what Russell Wilson does. Listen, is he going to be top 10 all time? He's certainly going to be in that conversation. We know there's about 5 we could just read off that. It's a log jam. I don't know if you're going to be able to eclipse those. But if you say top 10 is all time great, I think Russell Wilson still has that opportunity, certainly. And let's be real about this. First of all, this is why I don't go to barbershops. One, because I don't have hair. Because two, y'all love to watch a movie in its entirety and compare it to one that just started or one that's in the middle. I'm not going to do that. I am not that bored. I have 4 kids and 3 of them at home, and they're all under the age of 5. So I am not going to have that long conversation. But Russell Wilson, if he continues with his excellence, is going to put himself in that conversation. That said, what is that conversation and some of the criteria? Oh, you got an MVP vote. Well, Derek Carr got MVP votes. Phillip Rivers, Carson Wentz. So we don't even need this as a stepping stone to say you're going to be in an all-time great conversation. Let's just be real, because sometimes they give it to guys who deserve it in that moment, but it doesn't really lend itself to their overall success. That said, I want to talk about how we only measure how short people fall instead of how far they've come. How people come up short, like they keep moving the goalposts, they keep adding another box, and forget about the road traveled for Russell Wilson. Let's not forget that, because all of his success, it seems like sometimes people forget that this was a third rounder who was there when they had a franchise quarterback, they thought, Matt Flynn, y'all remember that? And in a preseason, he took his job and became dangerous. He became the guy we're seeing right now. And I never want to forget where he came from in terms of all of the obstacles placed in front of him. And he's still, right now, a topic on this conversation as an all-time great.
You got it, Manuel. Yeah.
You know
you
why?
You got it, Manuel.
You know, look. All I'm saying is the dude's going to be in that conversation, and you have not named 10 guys that already have trumped him.
Marcellus,
LeVar,
what's funny, I don't take Marcellus as a sentimental type, right? Well, Russell Wilson has accomplished so much maritally, relationally.
It was very sentimental.
It was so lovely.
It was sentimental.
Russell Wilson is an incredible human being, but Marcellus, what I have had to learn is we got to differentiate between the player and the person. You can have an MVP and not be an all-time great, but you can't be an all-time great and not have an MVP.
Let's see.
That's the thing. That is a great distinction. That is a great divide. To LeVar's point, if you want to say that J.J. Watt, who has multiple defensive MVPs, isn't an all-time great, okay, you're prerogative. But you can't be an all-time great and not have an MVP. Marcellus, if you want to talk hoops, whether Jordan, whether Kobe, whether LeBron, whether Kareem, these are guys that have MVPs to their name. They were at least the best at what they did when they did it. But Russ, first he had Manning and he had Brady, Roethlisberger. Then later on in his career, now you got Lamar and Patrick Mahomes. If you can never look at Russ and say you were the best quarterback in the NFL for one season, I don't know that you can say you were an all-time great. Not saying you weren't great, but all-time great, that's a whole nother distinction that is hard to sniff.
You compare basketball to football. When fewer players on the court, more impact, you could go both ways. But, hey, I'll let you be the analyst you want to be. Coming up, big expectations for Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott this year. But there's something that may hold them back. We'll explain next. Speak for yourself.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Let's move to D-Town, where the Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy was brought in because of what he was able to achieve with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Well, much to everyone's surprise, McCarthy will not be doing the play calling in Dallas. Instead, offensive coordinator Kellen Moore will, because McCarthy said it was, quote, the best decision for the football team. I ain't buying it. Joined once again by LeVar Arrington, but big bro Marcellus, I'm going to start with you.
Yes.
Could this be a problem for them Cowboys?
Oh, hell yeah, it's going to be a problem. Let me tell you how this goes. One, we have to understand what's at play right here. Coaches, especially head coaches, they get bored in the midst of one of their practice days. And I'm going to break that down for you in a second. But always remember that energy cannot be created or destroyed, just transferred. So coach has done this same thing before in Green Bay when he was like, you know what, dog? It's time for me to give up the play calling duties to focus on these special teams that kept us out the Super Bowl. You remember that time? And then they hit that struggle. They hit that bump. They hit the struggle bus. And he was like, give me them play calling duties back again. And he said, I would never do that again. But he's in this position right now. So let's talk about that practice day when coaches, head coaches get bored. We have our team meeting. We used to have it at 8 o'clock in the morning, team meeting. That's only like 5-10 minutes. After that, you're in O and D meetings. And then the head coach has to go, you know, do his duties as the head coach and make sure the owner's good, general manager, check in with the capologist, all that stuff, media, whatever. And then we go into our position groups. And now the head coach is kind of done with his work, and now he's like, well, what am I going to be doing? So you know what he's going to do? He's just going to mingle his way, lean on into that offensive coordinator room, look at Kellen Moore, that youngster, that young genius guru, and he's going to hear something that's going to trigger him. Like, ooh, that, I wouldn't call no X, Y, drag, double X, Z slot on that play. I wouldn't call it on that part of the field, but hey, I'm going to let it go. He's going to watch it play out on a Sunday, and he'll be like, damn it, I knew it. And this didn't work. And then that's going to play in his mind a couple times to the finally, he's going to be there one time in that meeting room and he's going to say, hey, Kellen, if you don't mind for a second, if I could. And then that's when it goes downhill.
It's going to break loose.
It's going to break down. I've seen it happen too many times. He will be calling plays if things don't go right and go right fast for the Cowboys.
But him calling plays and calling this a problem are two different conversations. He reserves the right to be able to call the plays whenever he liked the call to plays. That doesn't necessarily make that a bad thing. So I don't see this being a problem. What do you mean? What am I talking about?
Like, if he takes away the power from his offensive coordinator, that's not a problem.
And starts making play calls, that doesn't necessarily mean there's a problem.
Oh,
that just means that he's assisting. So that's that. We don't have to put a derogatory
He made an assistant an assistant again. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's just how it works when you're in a team sport and a team environment and you're delegating things. I look at this situation like, McCarthy is coming into that second, third child situation, right? This is his second head coaching job. So that first child, that first job, you're going to do everything by the book. You're reading it. You're asking questions. You're learning. You want to know how you can do it exactly the way that it needs to be done to protect your job security. But you also want to be the best you can be for the team. So this is a second child. So he's learned all his mistakes. Everything that he feels he did wrong, he's had plenty of time to go over that over and over and over again while he was watching the season last year. So to me, I think he made the decision based off of being educated on what you heard him say, what's best for the team. That's a very, very direct statement. And I think that you should lean on that statement, that part of the statement, in understanding why he delegated the calling to Kellen Moore.
Let me tell y'all why this is a huge problem. And it's
huge
because I feel like I'm having deja vu. You know, something that you feel like you've lived through before quite literally translates to already seen. In 2020, new head coach Mike McCarthy has an offensive coordinator that was a former Cowboys quarterback, wore the number 17. Jerry Jones handpicks this former Cowboys quarterback to run his offense. Well, I feel like I've seen this before. 2007, Jerry Jones hires Wade Phillips to be the head coach, handpicks another former Cowboys quarterback who wears the number 17. About 3.5 years later, that offensive coordinator that Jerry Jones handpicked, he elevates to become the head coach. It's not irony. Jerry Jones is up to something. Mike McCarthy in 2016 said, I will never do that again.
Yes.
That was in reference
to
handing over the play calling. He said, I will never do that again. And now in 2020, he didn't say Kellen Moore is a phenomenal play caller, so I'm going to delegate.
Well,
he didn't say that I want Kellen Moore to call these plays because he's a young budding star.
He
said, I'm going to do that because it's in the best interest of the team. Whose words are those?
Well,
those are Jerry Jones'
words. Don't do
that.
Don't do that.
I had this fact. Well, I had to do it.
Hey, but,
I got to do it.
Mike McCarthy did say he's a young, special play caller.
Absolutely.
And look, I don't know if that's podium talk or not, but he did give him some props. But it's funny that LeVar said that he had time to reflect on his mistakes And sure as you pointed out, Acho, he said he made a mistake giving up the play calling duties again. And then in his time to reflect, he comes back and does the same thing again. And LeVar doesn't think it's a big problem. LeVar, let me help you out.
He made that mistake in Green Bay.
Okay.
Not
but it's
in
the same.
Dallas. It's a different situation.
Well, LeVar, I know you're a high school football coach. And being that, you're probably guilty of stepping on coordinators' toes. So you don't see any problem with this. But we do. And let me tell you what this reminds me of. When I first had to get ready, prepare for my driving test. Y'all remember that? And you had to take your mama and your daddy bucket out. We had a 75 Monte Carlo and used to make all this noise, barely could turn radius all tight, whatever. And I remember my dad's like, all right, we're going to go in this parking lot. And, I killed the parking lot. Ain't no cars around here. It's empty. I'm killing it. Woo, woo. And daddy was like, all right, let's go on the street real quick. And I got on that street and all of a sudden cars said, meow, 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 and I got a little nervous. You know what my daddy said? Pull over, boy. I'm going to take over from here until you get this right. You think that Mike McCarthy going to let Kellen Moore drive his car into the dirt? Hell no. Nah.
That's not a problem, though. To reserve the ability to take over play calling should not be considered a problem. It should be considered an adjustment, an adaptation to the situation. To make it into a derogatory thing, I think, is irresponsible.
LeVar, you know why it was derogatory?
It's a problem.
Because
it doesn't mean that it's a problem.
I knew my daddy didn't trust me, and I knew I wasn't ready. That is a problem for a young
player. That's
not
a problem.
Oh, really?
That's the other side of it.
That helps the resume.
That's being a responsible adult. That could be averting you from what the situation could have led to, which is what? A car accident. Now, what's the ripple effect of him allowing you to continue to drive? That's not a bad thing that he's protecting you from your own self sometimes.
What about Kellen Moore?
It's just a matter of how you approach it.
What about Kellen Moore? How's that look?
Yes.
How's that feel?
It doesn't look good.
It's all positive.
It doesn't feel good. But sometimes you have to learn from the things that lead you down the road where you're currently at. It doesn't necessarily make it a horrible thing.
I learned a long time ago,
what
Coach. Coach, if you see me make a mistake in the first quarter, let me keep playing because I can self-correct. How many times you been out there and you went out there, this is my best move? What? That didn't work. But you need to, if Coach yanks you and says, you know what? You ain't doing nothing in the first quarter. How is that a positive, LeVar?
As a coach, because I'm the only one that would understand that out of the three of us sitting on this panel.
Because you're the one coaching and it's a very
different approach to when you're talking about coaching constituents as opposed to the players, the talent. All right. So to me, I think you guys are off base on what it is that you're saying.
You're the same coach talking about run laps still. So I ain't trying to play for
you. Hey, I do make
boys,
them run
if y'all
laps.
Need an offensive coordinator, LeVar, he's a guy for you. Yeah. Coming up,
that's pretty
good. Our big story.
Pretty good.
Anthony Davis had a big night for them Lakers.
Hell no.
I'll tell you why that put me the biggest smile on LeBron's face. That's next.
I ain't running no laps. Marcel Swatty here, still crispy. My man Emmanuel Acho. How you feeling?
I feel great, man. A little hot with this three-piece on. I'm not gonna lie.
But you got on shorts. What the hell are you talking about? You hot. Boy, this dude can never please him. Let's get to a big story and return to the Fakers. I mean, sorry.
Watch your mouth.
Let me be professional.
Watch your mouth.
The Lakers. Anthony Davis said earlier this week that his job is to relieve pressure off LeBron. Well, he did that in a big way last night, scoring 31 points in a blowout win against the Blazers. After the game, LeBron propped up AD while also comparing him to his former great teammates. Listen to the King.
I've had some great teammates in my career. AD is one of those unicorns, and he does things that some of my other great teammates are not capable of doing. In the same sense, I played with Dwayne Wade, and he could do some things that, you know, the AD is not capable of doing. And also played with Kyrie Irving, and he can do some things that D Wade and AD is not capable of doing. So I've had the luxury of playing with some great players, and that's just three of them.
Acho, did AD prove LeBron can count on him? Lean on me after a dominant game two.
Nah, bro, he didn't.
He didn't?
He did, but understand the explanation.
What?
If you're in a relationship, bro, and you get let down, say you get cheated on.
You know,
right?
Say
you get cheated on, and the next day they show up with flowers, right, and they make it up to you. All of a sudden, that doesn't mean that you can count on them because they remedied the letdown from the day or the week before.
AD
let the Lakers down in game one. Only had, 7 points in the second half? 28 total, but 7 in the second half. He didn't dominate. So then he comes back in game two, dominates. One of only 5 players in the shot clock era to have 30 and 10 in under 30 minutes. Remember, let me take you back. Second game in the bubble, AD let the Lakers down against the Raptors, completely disappeared, only had 14 points. What happens the next day? Next game against the Jazz, 42 points. Okay, game six in the bubble against the Pacers. AD lets the Lakers down, only has 8 points. Well, we get on him. The media jumps on his neck. Next game, 27 points. What AD has shown us is, okay, if I ever let y'all down, I promise I'm going to make it up to you. But what AD hasn't shown us, at least not of late, not in the last 8-9 games, is that you can count on me to do it consistently. AD is, we know we can count on him to show up when things get desperate, but can we count on AD if and when the Lakers go up 3-1 to close it out when the game don't mean as much? AD showed me he can ball. AD showed me he can dominate. AD showed me he can single-handedly essentially win a game. But to count on me means I need to see it over the course of time. AD hasn't shown us that over the course of time. He shows us that you can count on him for one game, but then that next game, what are we going to see? So last night's one-game sample size, it didn't show me that I can count on AD.
I learned a lot more about not only AD, but Acho with that answer right there. Because I've been wondering, my homegirls be hitting me up too, because you're a good-looking dude, man.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate that. You're kind.
Yeah, you're educated. I mean, it's obvious.
Strong hairline.
You know? I could get away with saying this. You're articulate. You know what I'm saying? How dare you say it if you ain't me? You're a star. You know, you're the man.
Uh-oh, here come the backhanded compliment. Yeah, I gotta watch out for this one.
And
here come the backhanded
compliment. I'll be texting him back. I don't know why he's single. And I just figured it out.
Uh-oh.
The standard's too damn high. Dog, take it from a married man. Bring it down a notch, girl. Bring it down one notch. He had 28 points. He went above his season average. All of them had minuses in the starting lineup. And AD took that to heart. And what I love about him is his response, is the flowers that he brought to LeBron and to the Lakers. He said, and he told everybody, I took it to heart. I felt disappointed in my effort. I felt disappointed in my performance. Not because it wasn't a good performance, but because, like the old adage says, be greater than your greatest excuse. And think about it.
So Wileyism?
No, not yet. It's getting there. I don't know. Maybe my second book. But here's the thing. AD was like, it didn't work. Whatever I did wasn't enough. And that's the beautiful thing about it. So now you look at AD talking to LeBron, supporting him and challenging him, he shows up in the next moment, the next opportunity. So I wouldn't call game one cheating. I would call game one not answering your text when it was late.
Okay.
And it was like, what are you doing?
But where was he at?
I mean, my phone died. My phone died. I couldn't get a charger.
He wasn't in nobody else's house?
I mean, he in a bubble. I hope he was in the bubble. Let's get to Slick Rick the Bucher on this. Rick, should LeBron be confident in AD after his dominant game two?
He can't be. Because the number one question that we have about Anthony Davis is not, can he fill a box score? Not, can he be dominant at the beginning of a game or even through the first three quarters of a game? Can Anthony Davis deliver in a playoff game in the fourth quarter? That is the question. How many minutes did he play in the fourth quarter last night? He didn't play in the fourth quarter last night because the game was already decided. Now, that's not his fault, but the thing that LeBron needs to know is, with the game on the line, can you deliver? And in crunch time, and what we have seen to this point is Anthony Davis has not answered that question. So can he count on that in the fourth quarter? Even in the big games during the regular season, could not count on that. And this is the element that really concerns me about Anthony Davis and his big performances. Is that they are always accompanied by great three-point shooting. He was 3-for-4 in game two. He was 0-for-5 in game one. If you look at his playoff history or even his bubble history, the big games that he has had in the bubble, he has shot the three well. He's a career 30-32% three-point shooter. Am I counting on Anthony Davis to be my go-to knockdown three-point shooter with the game on the line leading me to a championship? I would not feel comfortable counting on that. So I can't imagine that LeBron is.
Man, I feel in a weird place right now looking at a guy who, in a defeat, was 28-11, and then in a win is 31-11, and everyone keeps talking about his energy or his effort, and that was the difference. Or he didn't even have to play in the fourth quarter where he struggled. So we need to see that. Let me give you a story about those who achieve the same thing, but one makes it look more difficult, and we give that person credit. Follow me here. I'm in Jacksonville, and it's training camp, and it's this compromised receiver out there. Let's just say that limited athletic ability. And he runs his little nine route streak, and they throw the ball, and he dives for it. I mean, he gets parallel with the ground. Catches it, the crowd goes wild at training camp. And I remember our coach sitting there saying, yeah, if he was faster, he wouldn't have had to dive. Think about that. Because if you look at Anthony Davis, don't get into this measuring stick of, oh, if he's not sweating, if he's not giving you full effort, he's still not giving you buckets and production, because he is. So now I got to shut y'all both down and silence all of you with a Wiley-ism. This is Anthony Davis and his realization. Oh, there's a difference between doing your best and doing whatever it takes. And I think right now, Slick Rick, you've gotten confused between Anthony Davis taking that challenge, taking that mantle, and saying, you know what? I will do whatever it takes. It was a challenge issue to me. I improved on my season average. Let me get that up. Improved on my season average in game one. Oh, but that wasn't enough. So now I will do whatever it takes. That's the Robin I need if I'm Batman. Thank you. Oh, I just went dark. What just happened to me?
That's a hard act to follow. Honestly, I still want the music, but it's fine. the fact of the matter, Marcellus, with all of that, and that was a phenomenal performance you just put on. I wonder where you got that outfit. I'd like to borrow it next time. is this. AD has three 30-plus point games in a bubble. After his first one, he followed it up with a 14-point game. After his second one, 42, he followed it up with a 9-point game.
Oh, don't do that.
Yesterday, where we saw his third one. What is AD going to do for us next? When I look at consistency, that tells me if I can count on you. We just haven't seen it consistently. You're right. AD, he do make it look easy.
Make it look easy.
But what's going to happen after he balls? That's the question. The question ain't can AD ball. The question is, hey, after you ball, AD, what you going to do then? Because that showed me if I can count on you. One good date night, Marcellus, that don't mean I can count on you, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
like, you got to take her out on a couple good, consistent.
You're single butt trying to tell me how to go get a woman. I know how to get a woman.
The big question here is, can LeBron count on Anthony Davis to help him win a championship? Not just count on him in this vague sense, but to help him win a championship. And I have to look at what LeBron himself said about what AD can do Kyrie and Dwayne Wade couldn't do. But Dwayne Wade and Kyrie could do certain things that AD couldn't do. He won championships with Kyrie and with Dwayne Wade. And what was the one thing those guys could do? They could deliver in the clutch. They could get you big buckets in the fourth quarter. If AD can't get that, then I don't see the formula for LeBron James's previous championships working in this instance.
From LeBron the great to another great, let's talk about, coming up, Aaron Rodgers, who wasn't happy when the Packers drafted Jordan Love. Who would be? So now, is it his job to teach him what to do? We'll tell you next.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. It's no secret Aaron Rodgers wasn't a huge fan of the Packers drafting Jordan Love in the first round.
You think?
But things at camp seem to be going pretty well so far with Love, saying he's already learned a lot by watching Rodgers, adding, quote, "It's awesome to be able to see and take in." Joined once again by LeVar, but Marcellus, I'm going to you first. Does Aaron Rodgers need to be a good mentor to Jordan Love?
Yes, he needs to be a good mentor to Jordan Love. And I think Aaron Rodgers knows how this plays out because he's experienced it with Brett Favre. Learned a ton from Brett Favre in terms of that exchange of, hey, I know you were the franchise, but it's time to pass the franchise to me. What's the Wiley-ism for this one? It's pass the torch before it burns you. And that's what Brett Favre didn't do. And Aaron Rodgers has learned from this. When he first heard that Jordan Love was getting drafted to the Green Bay Packers, you know who told him that?
Who told him?
His marketing agent. Marketing comes into play because, one, You get paid the big bucks to do the things you don't want to do. Aaron Rodgers is sitting there like, I know the writing's on the wall. I got about 2 years here based on my dead cap numbers. So I'm going to play this role the right way. Because when I move forward, I want to have a good name and good reputation to my next landing spot. But also, I don't want this sour to place like Brett Favre did in his exchange with me. So it makes a ton of sense that he's going to go out there and be a good mentor, and he needs to be a good
Marcellus, mentor. He doesn't, bro. It's a dog-eat-dog world. LeVar, I got LeVar, ask me how many times has Marcellus taken me to breakfast, sir?
How many times?
None. LeVar, ask me how many times has Marcellus taken me to lunch, sir?
How many times?
None. LeVar, ask me how many times has Marcellus taken me to dinner since I moved to L.A. a month and a half ago?
I'm guessing this theme is consistent.
You're a smart man. None. You see, while I've been on this set with this lovely gentleman who I'd like to refer to as my big brother, he hasn't bothered to take me under his wing. He hasn't bothered to mentor me. He hasn't bothered to lend me any wisdom from his prolific NFL nor broadcasting
killer
career. He hasn't bothered to do any sort of these things. Marcellus told me one thing. He said, put your iPad to your right so when you're looking at your notes, it looks like you're still looking at me. That's the only mentorship that Marcellus has advised me on. I have had to steal Wiley-isms. I have had to steal and take. I have been gnawing and clawing. Marcellus, help me. Please, Marcellus, help me. I'm drowning. And he looks at me like, huh, young whippersnapper, do it yourself. And therefore, how dare you, Marcellus, say that Aaron Rodgers got a mentor Jordan Love when you, sir, you yourself haven't even bothered to mentor me?
First of all, I see how you are with this quarantine and your mask wearing. It's a damn pandemic. I ain't taking you nowhere. As soon as I get off this set, I don't know you until I get back on this set. I am not breaking quarantine. I'm not like LeVar in Palm Springs chilling out with TJ. Let y'all have y'all fun. Here's the thing. There was podium talk going on.
I got you, Manuel.
LeVar,
I got you. Don't
worry. Admit this podium talk from Jordan Love. This is my only issue real quick. He said, I've got two dudes that I can learn from. Aaron Rodgers and Tim Boyle. I don't believe that Jordan Love is telling the full truth from his heart when he says he can learn from Tim Boyle. Hey, Tim Boyle, you haven't thrown a pass in the NFL yet. You've been here 1 year. So why would you want to incorporate and join the name of Aaron Rodgers with Tim Boyle unless you're doing that player's podium talk?
Aaron Rodgers doesn't need to be a good mentor to Jordan Love. That's just the reality of it.
Heartless.
For what it's worth, Jordan Love has got to be as focused and as dialed in as he can possibly be to watch and learn winning ways and winning habits and to avert any bad habits and losing habits, that because those things show as well. I can recall my freshman year in high school, the greatest football player I ever seen with my two eyes in high school was our quarterback, Eric Kasparovich. Eric was so great, we won a state championship. I never won a championship ever again after my freshman year. But what I realized is it set the tone for how I viewed the game. It set the tone for how I studied the game. I never went to Eric and said, Eric, what are you looking at? Teach me what you're doing. I always looked at his relationship with our head coach and wanted the same relationship. So I started being very attentive to the things that he was doing. I actually figured out what he was looking at when he was watching the film. I listened to the exchange between him and the coach, and I started trying to find the film to mimic that. So to me, it's going to come down to Jordan Love really paying attention to the do's and the don'ts of what he sees Aaron Rodgers and the coaches doing. Don't worry about who you have the most to learn from. Be present in the moment because experience is your best teacher. So I would say it's not imperative for him to be a great mentor or even a good mentor to Jordan Love. He just has to be present.
I know you played high school quarterback. You didn't even play the same damn position. No wonder you had to watch what he did.
I did. Well, we were in the same room, and I did play every position.
That's because you were in high school, y'all.
Great player of the year, you know, which is the best player.
Oh, we going down that lane.
So, you know, I was good at every position. So let's just be clear.
Eric must have taught you a lot, it sounds like. Good job,
man. It was, yes. Good job, E.
LeVar, ignore Marcellus. Meanwhile, you and I can go get lunch, and we will not invite
you. There you go.
I got you. I know how y'all go.
What better way to close after a week than to hear what Uncle Jimmy has to say about the Lakers? Find out.
Thanks. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Let's talk about the Lakers. Blew out the Blazers last night to up the series at 1-game apiece.
Let's go.
Joined now by Uncle Jimmy. So did the Lakers prove they're the best in the West someday?
Oh, look, man, this is all of this right here is y'all's fault. Y'all did this.
What we do?
Okay. How we do it on?
Y'all the ones that kept on picking on Anthony Davis. You know, good and damn well. Anthony.
I got him. Like
right. Okay. You know what that boy's full government name is?
What is
that? That boy's name is Anthony Marshawn Lynch Sammy Davis Jr. III.
What do you mean?
Davis, okay. What's that?
Now, I know the boy look like he's from Kentucky. That boy's from? That boy's from Chicago. That boy's from Chi-Town. Mm. The land of Chance the Rapper. Uh-huh. The land of Common. Mm. The land of Brock and Michelle.
Yeah.
The land of Chief Keef.
Yeah.
Okay? So you talking about some peer pressure for your ass, okay? Marcellus, it's kind of like you when you was in Compton and the kids used to chase you and make you run home and sure. You'd run in the house talking about, I ain't got no water head. And your mama say, no, baby, no, you don't. But your mama also taught you not to tie your shoes at the top of the stairs, too, didn't she? See, that's the difference between Anthony Davis and you. Anthony Davis is in the bubble. He ain't got his sister to fight his bubbles. Anthony Davis had to go full-fledged Little Durrell last night. That's why he's talking about, my name A.D. Leave me alone. I'm like, oh, Lord, this boy done lost his mind. He ain't right. Somebody
he said Waterhead. That's real. And Kanye's from Shy, too.